I go to the door and Moochie's on the front porch, looking fresh in his Iverson jersey. I haven't seen him for about a month, maybe. Not since I asked him to leave my summer camp. It was 9 in the morning, and he was still drunk from the night before. Now, Moochie, I cannot have my team leaders coming to camp high. Today, he's clear-eyed, a backpack on his shoulder. Katie, he asks, can I get some notebooks for school? He knows I keep supplies for the neighborhood kids. He's been getting them every fall since he was 9 years old. So Moochie opens his backpack, and I give him a binder, ruled paper, number 2 pencils, and 3 composition notebooks. Moochie's got a new notebook. A new notebook. Pages so crisp they stick together. Anything's possible. This year I'll make it through algebra. I will study. I'll write 3x5 note cards for every paper and I won't skip school. This year is going to be different. I'm going to be different. School's going to be different.
Ask all of the teachers to kindly straighten out their lines.
All right, quiet down.
Then you get there, and, well, there you are, in school.
All your students are facing
lines, rules, rulers. First period, second period, bells, lectures, dress codes.
Everybody kindly salute, pledge.
Welcome to old school. I'm Katie Davis of NeighborhoodStories.org. From NPR, this is Hearing Voices, supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the National Endowment for the Arts. There's this high school. It's about 2 blocks from my house in Washington, D.C. Bell Multicultural High School. Producer Richard Paul spent a morning there following assistant principal Iracema Salcido.
Let's go, let's go! Victor, come in, please.
Victor, bye.
Hurry up, you guys. You heard the second bell. Let's go, let's go.
Mrs. Salcido's day begins at 7:50 a.m. when, for the first and last time this morning, she sits down at her desk.
Hello, is this Giselle? Hi, Giselle. It's Mrs. Salcido.
I'm also the administrator for the 10th grade.
Mm-hmm.
That's a difficult grade. I think research shows that a lot of the kids either stay or drop out in the 10th grade.
I didn't see you yesterday.
So well, we get the parents involved a lot.
That was the agreement, baby, that I would allow you guys to continue, but I do need to talk to your mom.
Typically, I get at this time. I try to make phone calls when I leave, before I leave, which I usually stay here until 7. If I don't get them, I try to do it in the morning.
Well, you know, your mom was supposed to come yesterday. Is she home? Alicia.
Mrs. Salcido has picked up her walkie-talkie. The signs on the front door asking visitors to check in are written in English, Spanish, and Vietnamese.
Hi. How you doing? What can I help you with?
A Vietnamese brother and sister walk into Ms. Salcido's office with their grandfather.
Ms. Salcido, he said yesterday about 10 p.m.
He says someone came to their house and they think ordered the girl never to come back to school.
What's going on with it? She told for me to get outside school.
But why? Why do you think she said that? Why? Because the only people that can tell her or drop her out is me or Mr. Keva. Yeah.
It becomes clear she is going to have to find a teacher who speaks Vietnamese to translate.
Tell him not to worry. I'd rather not go with him to talk to her because I don't want them to have a confrontation. I will handle it.
8:45 a.m., the bell
okay.
is rung.
Why don't you wait here?
Hola, señora. Rosita, ¿cómo está?
Students were going with Ms. Vasquez to the field trip this morning. Please report to room 209.
At 8:50 in the hallway, she's confronted by the computer teacher.
I fan back because okay. I'm dying.
Oh, this is
We might have to have it here. If we brought it here, it's probably because Mr. Keva wanted it here.
Where can I take my class then?
You want to go to the library?
Sure.
Off to the security desk to check on kids who've been suspended until their parents come to school for a meeting.
So she called that you cannot come back until she comes back.
Well, she's here.
Hola.
9 o'clock, down the stairs for the day's first enforcement of the dress code.
Checking. Get up.
Ay, mi Salcido.
Ana.
No, if you're going to be, if you're going to tell somebody, everybody got to
do it. Oh, we are. I'm starting with you.
I'm starting with you.
Ana Sanchez needs to go home and change. She's giving me a hard time.
Oh, okay.
Sherry, are you too busy this afternoon?
Oh,
I have 12 kids.
kids that are going to go to the Electronics Industry Association today, tomorrow.
Calculator was returned yesterday.
Great.
There's an eyewitness of who saw him, the person returning it, just who I suspected, or one of the people that I suspected.
Was it Edwin or Joseph?
Joe.
I thought so too.
What did I do? What did I do? I ain't do that. I don't know. See, I got Saturday detention for being 5 minutes outside before lunch started.
No, I just went up to 423 and it's hot.
If you want to take him outside.
She don't even know what she's suspending me for. I was standing on the front yesterday.
You know, we try so hard and we believe in our hearts we could help them, but it comes to a point that their problems are so big. You know, they're addicted. You know, we know kids that do crack cocaine every day or that have problems at a family, that they've been abused or so on and so forth. And to expect them to come and learn, you know, formulas, math formulas, it's just really not realistic.
Jerry's suspended. We need to. The mom is here.
909.
So if you give me a second,
she remembers.
I'll come
the Vietnamese back. Family.
Oh, I forgot about the parent over there. Marco! ¿Está el señor allá? ¿La señora todavía está allá abajo? Okay, we just need to...
We need to get Miss Vu to come.
Miss Vu, the French teacher, speaks fluent Vietnamese.
Let me get a mark to cover Miss Vu's class.
I'm an immigrant. I came at the age of 15, like many of these kids. And I always help through programs that help minority kids. When I was in community college, I was like a peer counselor to kids. And I felt that the best way to help, I would have to be in the schools.
Yes, Victor.
It's 11:10, and someone has stolen a girl's shoes.
Where are her shoes?
I swear, I
don't have time for this one.
I swear, for my mom, I don't know nada.
You're next to her. How are you not going to know who took it?
I don't know, porque ella se los quitó y andaba caminando en toda la clase sin los zapatos.
Such a waste of time at class time.
Yo estaba ocupado haciendo el examen.
So what am I supposed to do? What are we? How are we going to take care of this problem?
Yo no sé. El problema es de ella porque los
¿Por
zapatos.
¿Por qué de ella?
Porque los zapatos. Los zapatos
me molestaban. Me lo quitan un ratito.
It's well past 11, and Miss Salcido, nearing the end of her rope, leans her head against a bank of lockers and closes her eyes.
Sometimes I have to hold my temper. And I'd be. You know, when you're dealing with staff and be professional, sometimes they do things you want to say.
Shut up, okay?
I mean, that's why I think someone that doesn't have the desire or commitment or can relate to the kids would perhaps not be able to, I don't know the words put up with, but do this job. You cannot say I can or don't have time or don't know or it's too much. You just do it. That's the exciting thing with the job. You just not a dull moment.
Finally, sometime around 11:30.
Yes, Victor.
They found the shoe.
Okay, thank you. Let's get back to your post. I don't think there's another place like this. I really don't. What are you guys doing outside? This is a great place. Are the kids? They have dreams and desires just like any other kid. I cannot say anything bad about the schools or the kids. I really can. I have not had any negative experiences. The kids are great. The schools are trying with the limited resources to do what they can. People in the schools are exposing their lives day by day because of the social problems, the gangs, the drugs. We're out here, and we don't run away from the job.
It's 12:45, lunchtime, and only 6 more hours until the workday ends.
Edit. Okay, let's begin. Compound, a substance composed of two or more elements chemically combined in definite proportions by weight. Mixture, two or more substances that are not chemically united, such as air. Solution, a uniform mixture of varying proportions of a solvent and a solute. For many of our students, this is the lesson you've been waiting for. Lesson. H plus 1, Sodium, Na, plus 1. Magnesium, Mg, plus 2. Aluminum, Al, plus 3. Potassium, K, plus 1. Calcium, Ca, plus 2. Chromium, Cr, plus 2, 3, 6.
This lecture is from the group Jurassic 5. Richard Paul produced the story on assistant principal Iracema Salcido for WAMU Radio in Washington, D.C. Mrs. Salcido went on to found her own high school, and she won an Oprah Winfrey Angel Award. Her formula works. Students have to go to tutoring. They have to go to summer school. And almost all of them make it to college. You're listening to Old School from Hearing Voices.
Chemical change, a change that alters the composition of the molecules of a substance. New substances with new properties are produced.
From now until your next lesson, we want you to study carefully every section of Lesson 6 and to go back over Lesson 4. Practice carefully, and you will be ready for the new techniques and new situations we will cover together in Lesson 5.
He carried you, Katie. Tiffany is telling me this as she swings the pleats of her public school uniform up Columbia Road. Swish. He carried you. Swish. I'd die if it was me.
Dora is carried you. Well, I'll put it in proper language. Carried you. That means you got this, boy.
So yeah, getting carried is getting dissed, and it is bone-deep embarrassing. If it happens in school, 13-year-old Tiffany explains, you are marked. Friends turn away like they don't know you. Even being with someone who gets carried can be damaging. Tiffany was horrified the day Francesca said hello to a popular boy.
And he say, do I know you? And they get a little neck motion or everything. Like, do I know you? Seriously.
In other words, he carried her. Was rude for no good reason.
And we all out in public. I'm like, she all messed my reputation up.
And apparently, that's what I did to Tiffany a while back, all out in public. Here's what happened. I had signed Tiffany up for a reading program. Most D.C. public school students are way behind on their skills. A kid might make A's in the eighth grade and still read on a sixth grade level. The problem was, though, the first day of this reading program conflicted with Tiffany's ongoing mentoring sessions. That's easy, I told Tiffany. We'll just go down and ask the director of your mentoring program if you can miss one night. So that was the plan when we walked into the director's office. Before I opened my mouth, though, he looked straight at me and, well, here, let Tiffany tell the story.
Man, say, who are you? With an attitude. No, I'm going to put my little voice on. Who are you? I'm Katie Davis. I ran a program. Oh, and why are you here? I just want to explain that Tiffany, she has another program to do, and I want her to come. I don't want her to miss the first day. It's very important. It's maybe she can reschedule or do something. No, this is a one-in-a-lifetime chance. Students from the
I
world...
I tried to reason with here. Mentor Man. Come. I'm here because Tiffany needs to improve her reading skills. He was silent, his mouth set. Tiffany was looking at the floor, red splotches spreading over her cheeks.
I was scratching my head like, Katie got carried. He wasn't trying to work out nothing.
No, he was not trying to work out anything. He had reverted to a teenage boy in the hallway, trying to put me in my place. Mentor Man leaned forward and said, you know nothing about my program, about what we do here. We want Tiffany to go to Harvard. And I swear he said it like that. I wanted to scream back, she won't be able to find Harvard on a map if she cannot read. I said nothing, though. Tiffany just sat there in the middle.
Then he looks at me with a tough face. You better pick me. You better pick me. And Kay has that, I know you for the longest. We're like buddies. Then I'm like this. Na, 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 na. It's like we went all out Jeopardy style on everybody. It's like, da, na, na.
It dawned on me that I was losing. Maybe because we were on the mentor's turf. Maybe because I had become a supplicant. And possibly because whenever anyone mentions Harvard, I get a little insecure. So I changed tactics. Well,
What if Tiffany goes to a half an hour of my program and then shows up late to yours? That way she can go to both. A long silence. And then the slightest nod from Mentor Man. I immediately stood to leave, and I am not proud to say that I did not offer my hand. For one long block, Tiffany and I said nothing. As we rounded the corner onto Columbia Road, though, I had composed myself, and I was ready to point out the lesson. You see, Tiffany, conflict can be worked out. People can compromise. She looked at me like I had lost my mind. Tiffany had been in the room, and she was not buying it.
It's like, who wears the pants in that story? He did, actually. Let's say you came in with the pants, and you left out with a skirt. It's a difference. It's a difference.
I'm always telling the kids to back away in a fight. But I had just done that, and it felt wrong, sour. And I think maybe that's a good thing for me to taste, so I know how hard it is to walk away from disrespect. I kept trying to convince Tiffany, though, that she had witnessed some healthy give and take. All she said to me was, you gave it up too easily. I'd never hire you as a lawyer.
Be more aggressive, Katie. Be, like, just be like, say, well, sir, it's like you got a problem with me. Is that straight? Come on. Make sure your voice echoes and carries out.
I still urge the neighborhood kids I work with to walk away from any fight. Sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. But I now keep Tiffany's advice in mind. There is a way to carry yourself as you walk away from a fight so that you don't get carried.
He says the problem with teachers is, what's a kid going to learn from someone who decided that his best option in life was to become a teacher?
Poet and teacher Taylor Molly.
He reminds the other dinner guests that, you know, it's true what they say about teachers. Those who can, do. And those who can't, teach. I decide to bite my tongue instead of his. And resist the urge to remind the other dinner guests that it's also true what they say about lawyers, because we're eating, after all. And this is supposed to be polite conversation. I mean, you're a teacher, Taylor. Come on, be honest. What do you make? And I wish he hadn't done that. Asked me to be honest. Because, you see, I have this little policy in my classroom about honesty and ass-kicking, which is, if you ask for it, then I have to let you have it. You want to know what I make? I make kids work harder than they ever thought they could. I can make a C-plus feel like a Congressional Medal of Honor, and I can make an A-minus feel like a slap in the face. How dare you waste my time with anything less than your very best? I make kids sit through 40 minutes of study hall in absolute silence. No, you may not work in groups. No, you cannot ask me a question. So put your hand down. Why won't I let you go to the bathroom? Because you're bored, and you don't really have to go to the bathroom, do you? I make parents tremble in fear when I call home at around dinner time. Hi, this is Mr. Molly. I hope I haven't called at a bad time. I just wanted to talk to you about something that your son said today to the biggest bully in the class. He said, leave that kid alone. I still cry sometimes, don't you? And it was the noblest act of courage that I have ever seen. I make parents see their children for who they are and who they can be. You want to know what I make? I make kids wonder. I make them question. I make them criticize. I make them apologize and mean it. I make them write, and then I make them read. I make them spell. Definitely beautiful. Definitely beautiful. Definitely beautiful, definitely beautiful, until they will never misspell either one of those words again. I make them show all their work in math class and then hide it on their final drafts in English. I make them realize that if you've got this, then you follow this. And if somebody ever tries to judge you based on what you make, you give them this. Here, let me break it down for you so you know what I say is true. I make a goddamn difference. Now, what about you?
Two times two is four. Two times three is six. Two times four is eight. Two times five is 10. 2 times 6 is 12. 2 times 7 is 14. 2 times 8 is 16. 2 times 9 is 18. 2 times 10 is 20. 2 times 11 is 22. 2 times 12 is 24.
You are hearing voices from NPR. And this is Times Table with Soul and a Beat, an educational record from 1964.
And now the Times Table of 5.
5 times 2 is 10. 5 times 3 is 15. 5 times 4 is 20. 5 times 5 is 25. 5 times 6 is 30. 5 times 7 is 35. 5 times 8 is 40. 5 times 9 is 45. 5 times 10 is 50. 5 times 11 is 55. 5 times 12 is 60.
One more time.
5 times 2 is 10. 5 times 3 is 15. 5 times 4 is 20. 5 times 5 is 25. 5 times 6 is 30. 5 times 7 is 35. 5 times 8 is 40. 5 times 9 is 45. 5 times 10 is 50. 5 times 11 is 55. 5 times 12 is 60.
Coming up, sweaters, shy students, and sunscreen. That's right after recess, here in Old School, from Hearing Voices.
Hearing Voices is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes a great nation deserves great art. From NPR, this is HearingVoices.com.
I'm Katie Davis, and this is Old School from Hearing Voices. From Canada, here's poet Marin Cadell.
Girls, I know you will understand this and feel the intrinsic, incredible emotion. You have just pulled over your head the worn, warm sweater belonging to a boy. Now, you haven't had a passionate kissing session or anything, but you got to go on a camping trip with him and 8 other people from school. And you practically slept together, your sleeping bag right next to his. And you woke in the night to watch him as he slept, but you couldn't see anything because it was dark, so you just lay there and listened to his breathing and wondered if your heart might burst. The sweater has that slightly goat-like smell which all teenage boys possess, and that smell will lovingly transfer to all your other clothes.
If you get to keep it for a few days, you can sleep with it, but don't let your mom see because she'll say, what is that filthy thing and who does it belong besides the trash man? So you have to keep it under the covers with you. You can kind of lie it beside you or wrap it around your waist or touch it on your legs or whatever, but that's your business. Now, if the sweater has, like, reindeer on it or is a funny color like yellow, I'm sorry, you can't get away with a sweater like that. Look for brown or gray or blue. Anything other than that, and you know you're dealing with someone who's different. And different is not what you're looking for. You're looking for those teenage alpine ski chiseled features and that sort of blank look which passes for deep thought or at least the notion that someone's home. You're looking for the boy of your dreams who is the same boy in the dreams of all of your friends. Now, the sweater isn't going to fit you, of course. You have to kind of roll up the sleeves in a jaunty way that says, this is the sweater belonging to a boy, and the boy is a genuine hunk, a hunk of burning love, and this is not just some hand-me-down from your brother or your father. Monday, wear the sweater to school. Be calm, look cute. Don't tell the dream you had about the place the two of you would share when you get older. Just be yourself. The best, cutest, quietest version of yourself. Definitely wear lip gloss. He looks at you, and he looks away, and then he walks away, and the smell of the sweater hits you again, suddenly like ape scent gloriola, and you get a note passed to you by a girl in history that says he needs his sweater back. He forgot that you put it on in the tent on Saturday, and he's been looking for it. And you don't have to die of humiliation, you know. You are a strong person, and this is a learning experience. You can still hold your head up high as you run from the classroom, tearing the stinking sweater from your body. You look at that sweater, carefully, and you realize that love made you temporarily blind. You got a secret now, honey, and though you would never sink as low as him, you could blab it all over the school if you wanted. The label in that sweater said 100% acrylic.
I would describe myself as nice.
Nice and quiet?
Quiet also. Smart. Quiet again. Yeah.
I guess the first time I realized I was quiet was when people started pointing it out, like in junior high, and like asking me, why don't you talk?
I heard that question many times, why are you so quiet?
Really, the main reason I'm so quiet is I don't like anybody to know anything about me. That way, I don't have to worry about being hurt by friends, being hurt by family. I'm in my own world. Just leave me alone.
And I think other kids think that I'm judging them because, like, they don't see me as, like, cursing in the house or something, as some people do. When the bell goes off and people are, like, talking to their friends, socializing, going to their lockers, it's like I'm in a bubble or something, and the others are, like, all around me, but I'm not joining them. But there are some people like me, so I don't really think I'm by myself.
I kind of, like, crouch down and, like, try to walk by not being seen.
I'm walking alone. I feel isolated. Be like, the whole world's in black and white, but then I'll just be in the crowd, just in color.
I always wait until everybody else goes to class, like I go to class. Because I don't like being crowded around a whole bunch of people.
I want to be, like, in the shadows, in the backstage.
They, like, call me the stupid quiet kid because, like, at lunch, I sit there the whole time until lunch is over and just walk out.
Some people, they don't realize you're there until you leave, so maybe I want people, like, to notice that I am there.
Like, what if I won't ever get loud? I mean, I guess one of the things is dating. Like, what if that never happens? Or with teaching, if that's what I want to do in the future, like, what if I can't get up in front of a class of students and be able to talk and explain things without getting nervous and, I don't know, I guess just not being able to do what I want to do.
Like, if my wife, if she talks a lot and I'm quiet, I'm fine with that because it'll be easier for her.
If I express myself better, maybe I would be a better person. And not, like, defend myself, but just, like, say, that wasn't nice what you just said. Just to say that would be nice.
That was Heidi Kreis, Jeff Maldonado, Fabian Woldemariam, and Lavelle Fleming. Producer Hilary Frank spoke with them for the WBEZ series Chicago Matters. Coming up, another history lesson from teacher and slam poet Taylor Molly. But first, math class with Toronto poet and DJ Jelani.
Nine kids, nine histories, each one of them black. Let's talk about the first one. Now, his name was Jack. Now, Jack sold crack to kid number two. Let's hope that none of these kids was you. Kid two needed money, so he robbed kid three. It just so happens that kid there was me. Now, kid number four and kid number five said that we needed a crew in order to survive. Yo, kid number three was down with that, because remember, he had just recently been jacked. So they formed a crew and called it posse, marked their turf, and scouted for enemies. Now, kid six lived in their territory, but wasn't down with the crew, so you know the story. Kids three, four, and five terrorized kid six, so kid six was forced to get into the mix. He went to his cousin who already had a gun. It just so happens his cousin was Kid 1 who started this whole mess in the first place. Kid 1 and Kid 6 went and shot Kid 4. Kid 7 was an informant and sent police to Kid 1's door. That left Kid 6 on the block without protection from Kids 3 and Kid 5, so you know they were flexing. The crew had gotten larger by this time. Now it included Kid 8 and Kid 9. The authorities looked and said it was good. And that's the ghettoization of Vaughn and Oakwood.
Now let's have a little quiz.
6 times 2 is 6 times 3 is 6 times 4 is 6 times 5 is 6 times 6 is 6 times 7 is 6 times 8 is 6 times 9 is 6 times 10 is 6 times 11 is
and 6 times 12 is 72.
That was our first quiz. It was very nice, and there will be more to come.
Have you ever seen a Viking ship made out of popsicle sticks and balsa wood, coils of brown thread for the miniature ropes? Oars made out of chopsticks and a red and yellow sail made from a baby's footy pajamas? I have. He died with his sword in his hand and so went straight to heaven. The Vikings often buried their bravest warriors in ships or set them adrift and on fire, a floating island of flame, the soul of the brave warrior rising slowly with the smoke. In order to understand life in Scandinavia in the Middle Ages, you have to understand the Viking ship. So here's what I want you to do. The entire class must build me a miniature Viking ship. You have a month, and you must work together like warriors.
These are the projects that I am known for as a history teacher, like the Egyptian Pyramid Project. Have you ever seen a family of four gathered around a card table after dinner, each member of the family holding one triangular side of a miniature cardboard Egyptian pyramid until the glue finally dried? I haven't either, but Mrs. Steinberg said that even with one brother on one side saying, "This is dumb, Tony, this is a dumb project, you're going to fail this project, if I get Mr. Molly next year, my pyramid's going to be much better than this," and Tony on the other side saying, shut up, you little guy, no, don't let go until the glue dries or I'm going to kill you," it was the best family time that they had spent since Christmas. He died with his sword in his hand and so went straight to heaven, which the Vikings called Valhalla. Mr. Molly, if that's true, if you died with your sword in your hand, you went straight to Valhalla, then if you were like an old Viking and you were going to die of old age, could you keep your sword right by your bed so if you felt like you were going to die, you could reach out and just grab it? If I were a Viking god, I don't think I would fall for that. But if I were a Viking, that's exactly what I would do. Tony Steinberg had been missing from school for 2 months before we finally found out what was wrong. And then the 12 other boys in the classroom whispered the name of the disease as if you could catch it from saying it too loud. We'd been warned. The middle school head had come to class and said that Tony was going to try to come to school on Friday morning for a visit. But he's had a rough time. The medication he is taking has made all of his hair fall out. So nobody point, nobody stare, and nobody laugh. I always said that I liked teaching in a private school because I could talk about God in the classroom and not be breaking the law. And for an Episcopalian kid who only went to church on Christmas and Easter, I sure talk about God a lot in the classroom. Yes, in history class, that's easy. I mean, even the Egyptian Pyramid Project is essentially a spiritual undertaking, but how can you teach geometry and not believe in a God of perfect mathematical planes and geometric points, a God surrounded by archangels and right angles of varying degrees? Such a God would not give cancer to a seventh grade boy. Such a God would not make his hair fall out from chemotherapy, totally bald on a Friday morning in a jacket and tie. And I don't just mean Tony Steinberg. Not one single boy in my class had hair. The other 12 had all shaved their heads in solidarity. Have you ever seen 13 bald-headed seventh graders in jackets and ties, all pointing at each other, all staring at each other, and all laughing? It is a beautiful sight, almost as striking as 12 seventh grade boys, 6 weeks later, now with crew cuts, outside the synagogue, holding hands, heads bowed, circled around the smoldering remains of a miniature Viking ship, the soul of the brave warrior rising slowly with the smoke.
Ladies and gentlemen of the class of 99, wear sunscreen. If I could offer you only one tip for the future, sunscreen would be it. The long-term benefits of sunscreen have been proved by scientists, whereas the rest of my advice has no basis more reliable than my own meandering experience. I will dispense this advice now. Enjoy the power and beauty of your youth. Oh, never mind. You will not understand the power and beauty of your youth until they've faded. But trust me, in 20 years, you'll look back at photos of yourself and recall in a way you can't grasp now how much possibility lay before you and how fabulous you really looked. You are not as fat as you imagine. Don't worry about the future, or worry, but know that worrying is as effective as trying to solve an algebra equation by chewing bubble gum. The real troubles in your life are apt to be things that never crossed your worried mind, the kind that blindsides you at 4 p.m. on some idle Tuesday. Do one thing every day that scares you. Sing. Don't be reckless with other people's hearts. Don't put up with people who are reckless with yours. Floss. Don't waste your time on jealousy. Sometimes you're ahead, sometimes you're behind. The race is long, and in the end, it's only with yourself. Remember compliments you receive. Forget the insults. If you succeed in doing this, tell me how. Keep your old love letters. Throw away your old bank statements. Stretch. Don't feel guilty if you don't know what you want to do with your life. The most interesting people I know didn't know at 22 what they wanted to do with their lives. Some of the most interesting 40-year-olds I know still don't. Get plenty of calcium. Be kind to your knees. You'll miss them when they're gone. Maybe you'll marry. Maybe you won't. Maybe you'll have children. Maybe you won't. Maybe you'll divorce at 40. Maybe you'll dance the funky chicken on your 75th wedding anniversary. Whatever you do, don't congratulate yourself too much, or berate yourself either. Your choices are half chance. So are everybody else's. Enjoy your body. Use it every way you can. Don't be afraid of it or what other people think of it. It's the greatest instrument you'll ever own. Dance. Even if you have nowhere to do it but in your own living room. Read the directions, even if you don't follow them. Do not read beauty magazines. They will only make you feel ugly.
Brother and sister, together we'll make it through. Someday our spirit will take you and guide you there. I know you've been hurting, but I've been waiting to be there for you. And I'll be there just helping you out whenever.
Get to know your parents. You never know when they'll be gone for good. Be nice to your siblings. They're your best link to your past and the people most likely to stick with you in the future. Understand that friends come and go, but with a precious few, you should hold on. Work hard to bridge the gaps in geography and lifestyle, because the older you get, the more you need the people you knew when you were young. Live in New York City once, but leave before it makes you hard. Live in Northern California once, but leave before it makes you soft. Travel. Accept certain inalienable truths. Prices will rise. Politicians will philander. You too will get old. And when you do, you'll fantasize that when you were young, prices were reasonable, politicians were noble, and children respected their elders. Respect your elders. Don't expect anyone else to support you. Maybe you have a trust fund. Maybe you'll have a wealthy spouse. But you never know when either one might run out. Don't mess too much with your hair, or by the time you're 40, it will look 85. Be careful whose advice you buy. But be patient with those who supply it. Advice is a form of nostalgia. Dispensing it is a way of fishing the past from the disposal, wiping it off, painting over the ugly parts, and recycling it for more than it's worth. But trust me on the sunscreen.
Those words come from Mary Smeach of the Chicago Tribune, performed by actor Lee Perry.
Someday a spirit will take you and guide you.
The singer is Quentin Tarver, the music from the film William Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet.
I know
filmmaker Baz Luhrmann produced those thoughts on Getting Through. Eventually, you do get through. Through the day, the year. Through sixth grade, junior high, and high school. You graduate, and summer comes. And it's your time, you and your friends together. Oh, yeah. Most of the kids around my neighborhood live by the window rule. Stay in front where I can see you. So they play catch on the steps, football in the dusty tree boxes, right where Mom or Grandma can see them from the window. So when my summer camp starts up, I have a simple aim. Get these kids off their front steps, off their block. The first day of camp, my co-leader and I line the kids up. 9 and 10-year-olds are in front, the slouching teenagers in back. And we start out, single file, in the marshy heat of the city. Past the document dealers on Columbia Road, the boarded-up Chinese restaurant, the boys selling weed. This is boring, mutters Jose. And Rafael says, can we go back? We haven't even started yet, I tell them.
Oh, man.
We keep on, down past Quarry Road to where it dead ends, along Harvard Street to the creek, where it slices under the roots of Osage trees. We stop for a rest in the shade, and the kids come alive, skipping stones, turning over rocks.
We went down, and we got in the water. We had fun in the water. We were splashing the water. And we seen a lot of animals in the water. I forgot the name of them, but...
What did they look like?
So, we seen little fishes, and some of them looked like little kind of crabs.
Crawdaddies. Delonte had never seen crawdaddies, never tried to catch them. And this gets to me. Our neighborhood is 2 blocks from this huge swath of rugged woods called Rock Creek Park. 1,400 acres of woods. And most of these kids never go near it, never climb the trees or run down Snake Hill the way I did with my brothers. I think they're missing a part of growing up, having a ditch, a creek bank to call their own. So many of their adventures happen inside. Inside their TVs, their PlayStations. Here's Tiny, my camp co-leader.
For the most part, these kids, I don't think they really realize that these places are actually real. They're like television. They're illusions to some degree until they actually go and touch and feel and see them for themselves.
After our rest, we head up a dirt path towards a stand of trees I know well, where I've seen woodpeckers, cardinals, a great blue heron, and deer. As we climb up a rocky path, the complaints grow. How much longer? My feet hurt. I can't make it. The call of the wine.
It was hard. Like, it was too long. We walked everywhere.
I personally didn't like it because it was scary, and I didn't like the rocks and how they were.
It felt like a mountain, even though most of us never been in a mountain, but it was a lot of rocks, and you had to climb a lot.
Now, this is a place I walk every day. My refuge. To the kids, though, it's a forced march. It feels like torture, like...
I was in jail.
We see a possum skeleton, and Malaika bursts into tears. I take her hand and tell her what I love about the woods, how you can see daddy longlegs and caterpillars. And this just makes her cry harder, though. Behind us, Jane announces she can't go any further and gets 16-year-old Cedric, bless his heart, to carry her piggyback. I go and confer with Tiny. Maybe it's too much. Maybe we should turn back. You know, 10 years old is pretty young. Tiny answers with a long, hard stare. Don't ever expect an ex-soldier to cut you a break. Okay, I say. And we keep going. 2 miles, 3 miles, 4. Antonio, a 13-year-old who's extremely overweight, starts limping and sniffling. And then these big, dripping tears come for almost an hour. Finally, I detour out of the park to 16th Street and flag down a cab and put Antonio in it. Hey, that's not fair, yell the other kids. And the last mile home is hiked in grumpy silence with the occasional, why can't we get a cab too? The next day, though, the next day, the hike is legendary. We walked 20 miles, the kids brag. Really, it was about 5. We climbed a mountain. We survived. Our group has its own mythology now, and we invoke it all summer long. We tell and retell the story of our journey together.
Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took. But I do know that I love you. And I know that if you love me too, what a wonderful world this would be. Don't know much about geography. Don't know much trigonometry. Don't know much about algebra. Don't know what a slide rule is for. But I do know one and one is two. And if this one could be with you, what a wonderful world this would be. Now, I don't claim to be an A student, but I'm trying to be. For maybe by being an A student, baby, I can win your love for me. Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took. But I do know that I love you. And I know that if you love me too, what a wonderful world this would be.
I'm Katie Davis of Neighborhood Stories. Thanks to the WFMU blog and the 365 Days Project for Times Table with Soul and a Beat. And you heard poet Taylor Molly from his CD, Conviction. Music by Lanterna and Sam Cooke. Links to all the producers you heard in this hour are at hearingvoices.com.
Hearing Voices is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes a great nation deserves great art. Our producers are Scott Carrier, Ann Hepperman, Larry Massett, and Kara Oler. Our intern is Max Darum. Mix engineer is Robin Wise of soundimagery.com. Executive producer is Barrett Golding. From NPR, National Public Radio, this is HearingVoices.com.